Hawking swords. It's hard to tell when they're kidding. They have no facial expressions. Or faces. So, you want me to call you Jack?
It is a noble name, said the sword. Fit for kings, and sharp carving implements.
Okay, I said. Well, then, Jack, thanks for the save. You mind if... I reached for the hilt, but Jack floated away from me.
I wouldn't do that yet, he warned. The price of my amazing abilities. As soon as you sheathe me, or turn me into a pendant, or whatever, you will feel just as exhausted as if you had performed all my actions yourself.
My shoulder muscles tightened. I considered how tired I would feel if I had just destroyed all those weapons and cut all those beards. Oh, I didn't notice that earlier.
Because you hadn't used me for anything amazing yet.
Right. In the distance, an air raid horn howled. I doubted they got many air raids in an underground world, so I figured the alarm had to do with us.
We need to go, Sam urged. We have to find Hearthstone. I doubt Junior was joking about reinforcements.
Finding Hearthstone was the easy part. Two blocks away, we ran into him as he was coming back to find us.
What the H-E-L-H-E-I-M? He signed. Where is Blitzen?
I told him about Freya's gold net. We'll find him. Right now, Junior is calling up the Dwarven National Guard.
Your sword is floating, Hearth noted.
Your elf is deaf,
Jack noted. I turned to the sword. I know that. Sorry, introductions. Jack, Hearth. Hearth, Jack. Hearth signed.
Is it Hawking? I don't read sword lips.
What is he saying?
Jack asked.
I don't read elf hands.
Guys!
Sam pointed behind us. A few blocks away, an iron-plated vehicle with caterpillar treads and a mounted turret was turning slowly onto our street.
That's a tank, I said. Junior has a tank?
We should leave,
Jack said.
I am awesome, but if I try to destroy a tank, the strain might kill you.
Yeah, I agreed. How do we get out of Nidavellir?
Hearthstone clapped for my attention.
This way.
We sprinted after him, zigzagging through alleys, knocking over carefully handcrafted garbage cans that probably had names and souls. From somewhere behind us, a deep boom rattled windows and made pebbles rain from above.
Is the tank shaking the sky? I yelled. That can't be good.
Hearthstone led us down another street of clapboard row houses. Dwarves sat on stoops, clapping and cheering as we ran by. A few of them recorded videos of us on uniquely crafted smartphones. I figured our attempted getaway would go viral on the Dwarven Internet, famous among internets. Finally, we reached what would have been the southern edge of South Boston. On the far side of the avenue, instead of the M Street beach, the ground dropped off into a chasm.
Oh, this is very helpful, Sam said.
Behind us in the gloom, Junior's voice shouted,
Bazookas! Take the right flank!
Hearthstone led us to the rim of the canyon. Far below, a river roared. He signed,
We jump in.
Are you serious?
I asked.
Blitzen and I did this before. River washes out of Nidavellir.
To where?
Depends, Hearthstone signed. That's not reassuring, said Sam.
Hearthstone pointed back toward the avenue. The dwarven mob was gathering, tanks and jeeps and RPGs, and a whole bunch of really angry geriatric dwarves in armor-plated walkers.
We jump, I decided.
Jack the Sword hovered next to me.
Better hold me now, boss. Otherwise I might get lost again.
But you said the exhaustion...
might make you pass out,
the sword agreed.
On the bright side, it looks like you're going to die anyway.
He had a point. Oh, sorry, that was bad. I took the sword and wheeled it back in pendant form. I just had time to attach it to the chain before my legs buckled. Sam caught me.
Hearthstone, take his other arm!
As my vision went dark, Sam and Hearth helped me leap off the cliff, because, you know, what are friends for? Chapter 46. Aboard the good ship Toenail. I knew I was in trouble when I woke up dreaming. I found myself standing next to Loki on the deck of a massive ship.
There you are, said Loki. I was starting to wonder.
How? I noticed his outfit. What are you wearing?
You like it?
His scarred lips twisted into a grin. His white admiral's jacket gleamed with medals, but Loki wasn't exactly wearing it regulation style. It was open over a black t-shirt featuring Jack Nicholson's face from The Shining. The caption read, Here's Loki. Where are we? I asked. Loki polished his medals with his coat sleeve.
Well, neither of us is here, of course. I'm still tied up on a stone slab with snake poison dripping in my face. You're dying on the banks of a river in Jotunheim.
I'm what?
Whether you live or not, this may be our last chance to talk. I wanted you to see this. Naglfar, the Ship of Nails. It's almost complete.
The ship came into clearer focus. A Viking longship larger than an aircraft carrier. The main deck could have accommodated the Boston Marathon. Giant shields lined the railings. Fore and aft rose 30-foot-tall figureheads shaped like snarling wolves. Naturally, they had to be wolves. I peered over the side between two shields. 100 feet down, braided iron cables moored the ship to a dock. The gray sea churned with ice. I ran my hand along the railing. The surface was bumpy and prickly, enameled with white and gray ridges like fish scales or pearl shavings. At first glance, I'd assumed the deck was made of steel, but now I realized the whole ship was constructed of this weird translucent material. Not metal, not wood, but something strangely familiar. What is this? I asked Loki. I don't see any wood or nails. Why is it called the Ship of Nails? Loki chuckled.
Not carpentry nails, Magnus. Naglfar is made from the fingernails and toenails of dead men.
The deck seemed to pitch beneath me. I wasn't sure if it was possible to puke in a dream, but I was tempted. It wasn't just the obvious grossness of standing on a ship made of nail clippings that made me nauseated. It was the sheer volume of the material. How many corpses had had to contribute their nails to make a ship this size? Once I managed to steady my breathing, I faced Loki. Why? Even with the ruined lips and scarred face, Loki's grin was so infectious, I almost smiled back. Almost.
Amazingly disgusting, isn't it? He said. Back in the old days, your ancestors knew that nail clippings carried part of your spirit, your essence, your DNA, you'd call it now. Throughout their lives, mortals were careful to burn any clippings they made. When they died, their nails would be trimmed and the clippings destroyed so the material wouldn't contribute to this great ship. But sometimes,
Loki shrugged,
as you can see, the proper precautions weren't taken.
You've built yourself a battleship out of toenails.
Well, the ship is building itself. And technically, Nagelfar belongs to Surt and the Fire Giants. But when Ragnarok comes, I will guide this ship out of the harbor. We'll have an army of giants led by Captain Herm. Plus hundreds of thousands of dishonored dead from Helheim. All those who were careless or unlucky enough to die without a sword in their hand, a proper burial, and a decent post-mortem mani-pedi. We'll sail to Asgard and destroy the gods. It'll be awesome.
I looked aft, expecting to see an army gathering on the shore, but the mist was so thick I couldn't see the end of the dock. Despite my usual resistance to cold, the damp air soaked into my bones and made my teeth chatter. Why are you showing me this? I asked.
Because I like you, Magnus. You've got a sense of humor. You've got zing. So rare in a demigod. Even rarer among the Inherjar. I'm glad my daughter found you.
Samira. That's how she can turn into a horsefly. She's a shapeshifter like you.
Oh, she's Daddy's girl, all right. She doesn't like to admit it, but she's inherited a lot of things from me. My abilities, my dashing good looks, my keen intellect. She can spot talent, too. After all, she chose you, my friend.
I clutched my stomach. I don't feel so good.
Duh, you're on the verge of death. Personally, I hope you wake up. Because if you kick the bucket now, your death will be meaningless, and nothing you've done will matter.
Thanks for the pep talk.
Listen, I brought you here for some perspective. When Ragnarok comes, all bonds will break, not just the ropes binding Fenris. The moorings of this ship, snap. The bindings that hold me captive. Snap! Whether or not you keep that sword out of Surt's hands, it's only a matter of time. One bond will snap, and they'll all start going, unraveling like one huge tapestry.
You're trying to discourage me? I thought you wanted Ragnarok delayed.
Oh, I do.
He put up his hands. His wrists were raw and bleeding, as if he'd been handcuffed too tightly.
I'm totally on your side, Magnus. Look at the figureheads. The wolves' snouts aren't finished yet. Is there anything more embarrassing than sailing into battle with half-finished figureheads?
So what do you want?
The same thing I've always wanted,
Loki said.
To help you fight your fate. Which of the gods besides me has bothered to speak to you as a friend and an equal?
His eyes were like Sam's, bright and intense, the color of burning. But there was something harder and more calculating about Loki's gaze, something that didn't jibe with his friendly smile. I remembered how Sam had described him. A liar. A thief. A murderer.
We're friends now?
I asked. Equals?
We could be,
he said.
In fact, I have an idea. Forget going to Fenris's island. Forget facing Surt. I know a place where the sword will be safe.
With you? Loki laughed.
Don't tempt me, kid. No, no. I was thinking about your Uncle Randolph. He understands the value of the sword. He's spent his life looking for it, preparing to study it. You might not know it, but his house is heavily fortified with magic. If you took the sword to him, well, the old man can't use it himself, but he would store it away. It would be out of Surt's hands. And that's what matters, eh? It would buy us all some time.
I wanted to laugh in Loki's face and tell him no. I figured he was trying to trick me, yet I couldn't see his angle.
You think it's a trap, Loki said. I get that. But you must have wondered why Mimir told you to take the blade to the Wolf's Island, the very place where Surt wants to use it. What's the sense in that? What if Mimir is playing you? I mean, come on. That old severed head runs a pachinko racket. If you don't bring the sword to the island, Surt won't be able to get his hands on it. Why take the risk?
I struggled to clear my thoughts. You're a smooth talker. You'd make a good used car salesman. Loki winked.
I think the term is pre-owned. You've got to make a choice soon, Magnus. We may not be able to speak again. If you want a gesture of good faith, however, I can sweeten the deal. My daughter Hel and I, we've been talking.
My heart jackknifed.
Talking about... I'll let her tell you, but now...
He tilted his head, listening.
Yes, we don't have much time. You might be waking up.
Why were you bound? The question forced itself out before I realized I was thinking it. I remember you killed somebody. His smile hardened. The angry lines around his eyes made him look 10 years older.
You know how to ruin a conversation, Loki said. I killed Baldur, the god of light, the handsome, perfect, incredibly annoying son of Odin and Frigg.
He stepped toward me and poked my chest, emphasizing each word.
And I'd do it again.
In the back of my brain, my common sense yelled, "Drop it!" But as you have probably figured out by now, I don't listen to my common sense much. Why did you kill him? Loki barked a laugh. His breath smelled of almonds, like cyanide.
Did I mention he was annoying? Frigg was so worried about him. The poor baby had been having bad dreams about his own doom. Welcome to reality, Baldur. We all have bad dreams. But Frigg couldn't stand the idea that her precious angel might bruise his little foot. She exacted promises from everything in creation that nothing would hurt her beautiful son. People, gods, trees, rocks. Can you imagine exacting a promise from a rock? Frigg managed it. Afterward, the gods had a party to celebrate. They started throwing things at Baldur just for laughs. Arrows, swords, boulders, each other. Nothing would hurt him. It was as if the idiot was surrounded by a force field. Well, I'm sorry. The thought of Mr. Perfect also being Mr. Invulnerable made me sick.
I blinked, trying to get the sting out of my eyes. Loki's voice was so full of hatred, it seemed to make the air burn. You found a way to kill him.
Mistletoe!
Loki's smile brightened.
Can you imagine? Frigg forgot one tiny little plant. I fashioned a dart from the stuff, gave it to Balder's blind brother, a god named Hod. I didn't want him to miss the fun of chucking deadly objects at Balder, so I guided Hod's hand and, well, Frigg's worst fears came true. Balder deserved it.
For being too handsome and popular.
Yes!
For being loved.
Exactly!
Loki leaned forward until we were almost nose to nose.
Don't tell me you haven't done the same kinds of things. Those cars you broke into, those people you stole from. You picked people you didn't like, eh? You picked the rich, handsome, stuck-up snobs who annoyed you.
My teeth chattered harder.
I never killed anyone.
Oh, please.
Loki stepped back, examining me with a look of disappointment.
It's only a matter of degree. So I killed a god. Big deal. He went to Niflheim and became an honored guest in my daughter's palace. And my punishment? You want to know my punishment?
You were tied on a stone slab, I said, with poison from a snake dripping in your face. I know.
Do you?
Loki pulled back his cuffs, showing me the raw scars on his wrists.
The gods were not content to punish me with eternal torture. They took out their wrath upon my two favorite sons, Vali and Narvi. They turned Vali into a wolf and watched with amusement while he disemboweled his brother Narvi. Then they shot and gutted the wolf. The gods took my innocent son's own entrails.
Loki's voice cracked with grief.
Well, Magnus Chase, let's just say I was not bound with ropes.
Something in my chest curled up and died, possibly my hope that there was any kind of justice in the universe.
Gods.
Loki nodded.
Yes, Magnus, the gods. Think about that when you meet Thor.
I'm meeting Thor?
I'm afraid so. The gods don't even pretend to deal in good and evil, Magnus. It's not the Aesir way. Might makes right. So tell me, do you really want to charge into battle on their behalf?
The ship trembled under my feet. Fog rolled across the deck.
Time for you to go, Loki said. Remember what I said. Oh, and have fun getting mouth to mouth from a goat.
Wait, what?
Loki wiggled his fingers, his eyes full of malicious glee. Then the ship dissolved into gray nothingness.
Chapter 47. I psychoanalyze a goat. As Loki had promised, I woke up with a goat in my face. Confession time. My only previous experience with kissing had been with Jackie Molotov in 7th grade, behind the bleachers at a school dance. Yes, I know that's lame, seeing as how I was now 16. But during the past few years, I'd been a little busy, living on the street and whatnot. Anyway, with apologies to Jackie, getting mouth-to-mouth from a goat reminded me of her. I rolled over and puked into the river, conveniently located right next to me. My bones felt as if they'd been broken and mended with duct tape. My mouth tasted like chewed grass and old nickels.
Oh, you're alive, said the goat.
He sounded mildly disappointed. I sat up and groaned. The goat's horns curved outward like the top half of an hourglass. Sticker burrs matted his shaggy brown fur. A lot of questions crowded into my head.
Where am I? Why are you a talking goat? Why does your breath smell so bad? Have you been eating spare change?
The first question that came out was, where are my friends?
The elf and girl? Asked the goat. Oh, they're dead.
My heart threatened to exit via my throat.
What? No!
The goat gestured with his horns. A few yards to my right, Hearthstone and Sam lay crumpled on the rocky beach. I scrambled over. I placed my hands on their throats and almost passed out again, from relief this time.
They're not dead,
I told the goat. They both have pulses.
Oh,
the goat sighed.
Well, give them a few more hours and they'll probably be dead.
What is wrong with you?
Everything, said the goat. My whole life is one big...
Never mind, I said. Just be quiet. The goat brayed.
Sure, I understand. You don't want to know my problems. No one does. I'll be over here, weeping or whatever. Just ignore me.
Keeping my hands against Sam and Hearthstone's carotid arteries, I sent warmth through my fingertips into their circulatory systems. Sam was easy to heal. Her heart was strong. She responded almost immediately, her eyes fluttering open, her lungs gasping for air. She curled sideways and began vomiting, which I took as a good sign. Hearthstone, though, something was wrong, beyond the water in his lungs and the cold in his limbs. Right at his core, a dense knot of dark emotion sapped his will to live. The pain was so intense, it threw me back to the night of my mother's death. I remembered my hand slipping from the fire escape, the windows of our apartment exploding above me. Hearthstone's grief was even worse than that. I didn't know exactly what he had suffered, but his despair almost overwhelmed me. I grasped for a happy memory. My mom and me picking wild blueberries on Hancock Hill, the air so clear I could see Quincy Bay glittering on the horizon. I sent a flood of warmth into Hearthstone's chest. His eyes flew open. He stared at me, uncomprehending. Then he pointed at my face and gestured weakly, the sign for light.
What do you mean? I asked.
Sam groaned. She rose on one arm and squinted at me.
Magnus, why are you glowing?
I looked at my hands. Sure enough, I seemed to have been dipped in Folkvanger light. The warm, buttery aura was starting to fade, but I could feel residual power tingling along my arm hairs. Apparently, I said, if I heal too much at once, I glow. Sam winced.
Well, thanks for healing us, but try not to self-combust. How is Hearth?
I helped him sit up.
How you feeling, buddy?
He made a circle with his thumb and middle finger, then flicked it upward, the sign for terrible. No surprise. Given the depth of pain I'd felt within him, I was surprised he wasn't constantly screaming.
Hearth, I started to say, when I healed you, I...
He put his hands over mine, a sign language version of hush. Maybe we had some residual connection from the healing magic, but when I met Hearthstone's eyes, I could tell what he was thinking. His message was an almost audible voice in my head, like when Jack the Sword had started to speak.
Later, Hearth told me. Thank you, brother.
I was too startled to reply. The goat plodded over.
You really should take better care of your elf. They need lots of sunshine, not this weak Jotunheim light. And you can't overwater them by drowning them in rivers.
Hearthstone frowned. He signed, "The goat is speaking?" I tried to clear my head.
Yeah, he is.
I also read sign language.
said the goat.
My name is Tangnyostyr, which means teeth grinder, because, well, it's a nervous habit of mine. But nobody calls me Tangnyostyr. It's a horrible name. Just call me Otis.
Sam struggled to her feet. Her hijab had come undone and now hung around her neck like a gunslinger's bandana.
So, Otis, what brings you here to this place that is wherever we are?
Otis sighed.
I got lost, which is typical. I was trying to find my way back to camp when I found you all instead. I suppose you'll kill me and eat me for dinner now.
I frowned at Sam. Were you planning to kill the goat?
No. Were you?
I looked at Otis.
We weren't planning to kill you.
It's okay if you want to, Otis said. I'm used to it. My master kills me all the time.
He does? I asked.
Oh, sure. I'm basically a talking meal on four hooves. My therapist says that's why I'm so down all the time, but I don't know. I think it goes way back to when I was a kid.
Sorry, wait. Who is your master?
Hearthstone spelled out T-H-O-R-D-U-H.
That's right, said the goat. Although his last name is not Duh. You haven't seen him, have you?
No.
I thought about my dream. I could still smell the bitter almonds on Loki's breath.
The gods don't even pretend to deal in good and evil, Magnus. Think about that when you meet Thor.
Junior had told us to seek out Thor. The river had somehow brought us to where we needed to be. Only now, I wasn't sure I wanted to be here. Sam readjusted her headscarf.
I'm not a big fan of Thor, but if he can give us directions to Lyngvi, we need to talk to him.
Except the goat is lost, I said. So how do we find Thor? Hearthstone pointed to my pendant. Ask Jack. Instead of spelling the name, he made the sign for Jack in the Box, which looked like a finger rabbit popping up from behind his hand. Sometimes sign language can be a little too literal. I pulled off the pendant. The sword grew to full length and began to hum.
Hey,
said Jack, the runes glowing along his blade.
Glad you survived. Oh, is that Otis? Cool. Thor must be around here somewhere.
Otis bleated.
You have a talking sword? I've never been killed by a talking sword before. That's fine. If you could just make a clean cut right across the throat.
Otis!
Jack said.
Don't you know me? I'm Frey's sword, Sumerbrander. We met at that party at Bilskirnir, the one where you were playing tug-of-war with Loki?
Oh.
Otis shook his horns.
Yes, that was embarrassing.
Jack, I said, we're looking for Thor. Any chance you can point us in the right direction?
Easy McSqueezy.
The sword tugged at my arm.
I'm reading a big concentration of hot air and thunder that way.
Sam and I helped Hearthstone to his feet. He wasn't looking too good. His lips were pale green. He wobbled like he'd just gotten off a tilt-a-whirl.
Otis, Sam said, can our friend ride you? It might be quicker.
Sure, the goat said. Ride me, kill me, whatever. But I should warn you, this is Jotunheim. If we go the wrong way, we'll run across giants. Then we'll all be butchered and put in a stew pot.
We won't go the wrong way, I promised.
Will we, Jack?
Hmm?
Said the sword.
Oh, no, probably not. Like, a 60% chance we'll live.
Jack.
Kidding, he said. Geez. So uptight.
He pointed upstream, and led us through the foggy morning, with spotty snow flurries and a 40% chance of death. Chapter 48. Hearthstone passes out even more than Jason Grace, though I have no idea who that is. Jotunheim looked a lot like Vermont, just with fewer signs offering maple syrup products. Snow dusted the dark mountains. Waist-high drifts choked the valleys. Pine trees bristled with icicles. Jack hovered in front, guiding us along the river as it zigzagged through canyons blanketed in sub-zero shadows. We climbed trails next to half-frozen waterfalls, my sweat chilling instantly against my skin. In other words, it was a huge amount of fun. Sam and I stayed close to Hearthstone. I hoped my residual aura of Frey Glow might do him some good, but he still looked pretty weak. The best we could do was keep him from sliding off the goat. "Hang in there," I told him. He signed something, maybe sorry, but his gesture was so listless I wasn't sure. "Just rest," I said. He grunted in frustration. He groped through his bag of runes, pulled one out, and placed it in my hands. He pointed to the stone, then to himself, as if to say, "This is me." The rune was one I didn't know. Sam frowned when she saw it. "That's Perthro."
"What does it mean?" I asked.
She glanced cautiously at Hearth.
"Are you trying to explain what happened to you? You want Magnus to know?"
Hearthstone took a deep breath, like he was preparing for a sprint. He signed, "Magnus, felt, pain." I closed my fingers around the stone. "Yeah. When I healed you, there was something dark." Hearth pointed again at the stone. He looked at Sam.
"You want me to tell him?" she asked. "You sure?"
He nodded, then rested his head against the goat's back and closed his eyes. We walked for about 20 yards before Sam said anything.
"When Hearth and I were in Alfheim," she started, "he told me part of his story. I don't know all the details, but his parents..."
She struggled to find words. Otis the goat bleated.
"Go on. I love depressing stories."
"Be quiet," Sam ordered.
"I'll just be quiet, then," the goat agreed.
I studied Hearthstone's face. He looked so peaceful asleep. "Blitzen told me a little bit," I said. "Hearth's parents never accepted him because he was deaf."
"It was worse than that," Sam said. "They were not good people."
Some of Loki's acidic tone crept into her voice, as if she were imagining Hearth's parents on the receiving end of mistletoe darts.
"Hearth had a brother, Andiron, who died very young. It wasn't Hearthstone's fault, but his parents took out their bitterness on him. They always told him the wrong brother had died. To them, Hearth was a disappointment, a disabled elf, a punishment from the gods. He could do no right."
I clenched the runestone. "He still carries all that pain inside.
Gods."
Sam laid her hand on Hearth's ankle.
"He couldn't tell me the details of how he grew up, but I got the feeling it was worse than you can imagine."
I looked at the rune. No wonder he daydreamed about working magic. But this symbol...
"Perthro symbolizes an empty cup lying sideways," Sam said. "It could be spilled drink, or a cup waiting to be filled, or a cup for throwing dice, like fate."
"I don't understand." Sam brushed some goat hair from Hearthstone's pants cuff.
I think Perthro is the rune Hearthstone personally relates to. When he went to Mimir and drank from the well, Hearthstone was offered a choice between two futures. If he took the first path, Mimir would grant him speech and hearing and send him back to Alfheim to live a normal life, but he would have to give up his dream of magic. If he chose the second path,
he'd learn magic, I guessed. But he would stay the way he is, deaf and dumb, hated by his own parents. What kind of messed up choice is that? I should have stepped on Mimir's face when I had the chance.
Sam shook her head. Mimir just presented the choices. Magic and normal life are mutually exclusive. Only people who have known great pain have the capacity to learn magic. They have to be like hollow cups. Even Odin, he gave up an eye to drink from Mimir's well, but that was just the beginning. In order to learn the runes, Odin fashioned a noose and hanged himself from a branch of the world tree for 9 days.
My stomach checked to see if it had anything left to retch. It settled for dry spasms.
That's not right. But it was necessary, Sam said. Odin pierced his side with his own spear and hung there in pain, without food or water, until the runes revealed themselves. The pain made him hollow, a receptacle for magic.
I looked at Hearthstone. I wasn't sure whether to hug him or wake him up and scold him. How could anyone willingly choose to hold on to that much pain? What kind of magic could possibly be worth the cost?
I've done magic, I said. Healing, walking into flames, blasting weapons out of people's hands. But I've never suffered like Hearth has.
Samira pursed her lips.
That's different, Magnus. You were born with your magic, an inheritance from your father. You can't choose your abilities or change them. Alfsader is innate. It's also lesser magic compared to what the runes can do.
Lesser? I didn't want to argue about whose magic was more impressive, but most of the things I'd seen Hearthstone do had been pretty subtle.
I told you back in Valhalla, Sam said, the runes are the secret language of the universe. Learning them, you can recode reality. The only limits on your magic are your strength and your imagination.
So why don't more people learn runes?
That's what I've been telling you. It requires incredible sacrifice. Most people would die before they got as far as Hearthstone has.
I tucked Hearthstone's scarf around his neck. I understood now why he'd been willing to risk rune magic. To a guy with his troubled past, recoding reality must have sounded pretty good. I also thought about the message he'd whispered into my mind. He'd called me brother. After everything Hearthstone had been through with his own brother's death, that could not have been easy.
So Hearth made himself an empty cup, I said. Like Perthro. Trying to fill himself with the power of magic, Sam agreed. I don't know all the meanings of Perthro, Magnus, but I do know one thing. Hearthstone cast it when we were falling from the cliff into the river.
I tried to remember, but I'd been overwhelmed with exhaustion as soon as I gripped the sword.
What did it do?
It got us here, Sam said. And it left Hearthstone like that.
She nodded to his snoring form. I can't be sure, but I think Perthro is his... What do Christians call it? A Hail Mary pass. He was throwing that rune like you'd throw dice from a cup, turning our fate over to the gods.
My palm was now bruised from clenching the stone. I still wasn't sure why Hearthstone had given it to me, but I felt a strong instinct to keep it for him, if only temporarily. No one should carry that kind of fate alone. I slipped the rune into my pocket. We trekked through the wilderness in silence for a while. At one point, Jack led us over the river on a fallen tree trunk. I couldn't help looking both ways for giant squirrels before crossing. In places, the snow was so deep, we had to hop from boulder to boulder, while Otis the goat speculated about which one of us would slip, fall, and die first. I wish you'd be quiet, I muttered. I also wish we had snowshoes.
You'd need Uller for that, said the goat.
Who?
The god of snowshoes, said Otis. He invented them. Also archery and, I don't know, other stuff.
I'd never heard of a snowshoe god, but I would have paid real money if the god of snowmobiles had come roaring out of the woods right then to give us a lift. We kept trudging along. Once, we spotted a stone house on the summit of a hill. The gray light and the mountains played tricks with my perception. I couldn't tell if the house was small and nearby, or massive and far away. I remembered what my friends had told me about giants, that they lived and breathed illusions.
See that house? Jack said. Let's not go there.
I didn't argue.
Judging time was difficult, but by late afternoon, the river had turned into a raging current. Cliffs rose along the opposite bank. In the distance, through the trees, I heard the roar of a waterfall.
Oh, that's right, said Otis. I remember now.
You remember what? I asked.
Why I left. I was supposed to get help from my master.
Sam brushed a clump of snow off her shoulder.
Why would Thor need help?
The rapids, said Otis. I guess we'd better hurry. I was supposed to be quick, but I stood watching you guys for almost a day.
I flinched.
Wait, we were unconscious for a whole day?
At least, said Otis.
He's right, Jack said. According to my internal clock, it's Sunday the 19th. I warned you, once you took hold of me... Well, we fought those dwarves on Friday. You slept all the way through Saturday.
Sam grimaced.
We've lost valuable time. The Wolf's Island will appear in 3 more days, and we don't even know where Blitzen is.
Probably my fault, Otis offered. I should have saved you earlier, but giving a human mouth-to-mouth, I had to work up my nerve. My therapist gave me some breathing exercises.
Guys, Jack the Sword interrupted, we're close now. For real this time.
He hovered off through the woods. We followed the floating sword until the trees parted. In front of us stretched a beach of jagged black rocks and chunks of ice. On the opposite bank, sheer cliffs rose into the sky. The river had turned into full-on Class 5 rapids, a combat zone of whitewater and half-submerged boulders. Upstream, the river was compressed between 2 skyscraper-sized stone columns. Man-made or natural, I couldn't tell. Their tops were lost in the clouds. From the fissure between them, the river blasted out in a vertical sheet, less like a waterfall and more like a dam splitting down the middle. Suddenly, Jotunheim did not seem like Vermont. It seemed more like the Himalayas. Some place not meant for mortals. It was hard to focus on anything except the raging falls, but eventually I noticed a small campsite on the beach, a tent, a fire pit, and a second goat with dark fur pacing nervously on the shore. When the goat saw us, he came galloping over. Otis turned to us and shouted over the roar of the river,
"This is Marvin! He is my brother. His proper name is Tangrisner, Snarler, but... Artis," Marvin yelled. "Where have you been?" "I forgot what I was doing," said Otis.
Marvin bleated in exasperation. His lips were curled in a permanent snarl, which, gee, I don't know, might have been how he got the name Snarler.
"This is the help you found?"
Marvin fixed his yellow eyes on me.
2 scrawny humans and a dead elf?
He's not dead, I yelled. Where's Thor?
In the river,
Marvin pointed with his horns.
The god of thunder is about to drown, and if you don't figure out a way to help him, I'll kill you. By the way, nice to meet you.
Chapter 49.
Well, there's your problem. You've got a sword up your nose.
I couldn't help it. When I heard the name Thor, I thought about the guy from the movies and comics. A big superhero from outer space, with bright spandex tights, a red cape, Goldilocks hair, and maybe a helmet with fluffy little dove wings. In real life, Thor was scarier, and redder, and grungier. Also, he could cuss like a drunken creative sailor.
"Mother-grubbing scumbucket!" he yelled.
Or something along those lines. My brain may have filtered the actual language, as it would have made my ears bleed.
"Where is my backup?"
He stood chest deep in the flood near the opposite side, clinging to a scrubby bush that grew from the cliff. The rock was so smooth and slick, there were no other handholds. The bush looked like it was about to pull free of its roots. Any minute, Thor was going to get flushed downstream, where rows of jagged rocks shredded the current in a series of cataracts, perfect for making a Thor smoothie. From this distance, through the spray of water and mist, I couldn't see much of the god himself. Shoulder-length red hair, a curly red beard, and bodybuilder arms protruding from a sleeveless leather jerkin. He wore dark iron gauntlets that reminded me of robot hands, and a chainmail vest Blitzen would have found very trendy.
"Beard-burning son of a mud-lover!"
roared the god.
"Otis, is that you? Where's my artillery? My air support? Where the hellhame is my cavalry?"
"I'm here, boss," Otis called. "I brought 2 kids and a dead elf."
"He's not dead," I said again.
"A half-dead elf,"
Otis corrected.
"What good is that?"
Thor bellowed.
"I need that giantess killed, and I need her killed now."
"Giantess?" I asked. Marvin headbutted me.
"That one, stupid."
He nodded toward the waterfall. For a moment, the fog cleared from the tops of the cliffs, and I saw the problem. Next to me, Sam made a sound like she was being garroted.
"Holy Heimdall!"
Those skyscraper-sized pillars of rock were actually legs. Immense legs so gray and rough they blended in with the surrounding cliffs. The rest of the woman was so tall, she made Godzilla look like a toy poodle. She made the Sears Tower look like a traffic cone. Her thigh-length dress was stitched together from so many animal hides, it probably represented the extinction of several dozen species. Her face, somewhere up there in the stratosphere, was as stony and grim as a Mount Rushmore president's, surrounded by a hurricane of long, dark hair. She gripped the cliff tops on either side of the river as if straddling the torrent was hard even for her. She looked down, smiling cruelly at the little speck of thunder god caught in the current, then squeezed her legs closer together. The waterfall sprayed out between her shins in a highly pressurized curtain of liquid force. Thor tried to shout, but got a mouthful of river. His head went under. The bush he was clinging to bent sideways, its roots snapping one after the other.
"She's going to wash him into oblivion," Marvin said. "Do something, humans!"
"Like what?" I thought. "He's a god," I said. "Can't he fly? Can't he zap her with lightning, or what about his hammer? Doesn't he have a hammer?" Marvin snarled. He was very good at snarling.
"Gee, why didn't we think of that? If Thor could do any of those things without losing his grip and getting instantly killed, don't you think he would have done it by now?"
I wanted to ask how a god could get killed, since they were supposed to be immortal. Then I thought about Mimir existing forever as a severed head, and Baldur getting cut down by a mistletoe dart and spending eternity down in Hell World. I looked at Sam. She shrugged helplessly.
Against a giant that big, I have nothing.
Hearthstone mumbled in his sleep. His eyelids were starting to flutter, but he wasn't going to be casting magic any time soon. That left me only one friend to call on.
Jack!
The sword hovered next to me.
Yeah?
You see that massive giantess blocking the river?
Technically speaking, Jack said, I can't see anything, because I don't have eyes. But yes, I see the giant.
You think you could fly up there and, I don't know, kill her?
Jack hummed indignantly.
You want me to kill a 2,000-foot-tall giantess?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You'd need to grab me and throw me like you've never thrown anything before. You'd need to really believe that killing this giantess is a worthy deed. And you'd need to be prepared for what will happen when you take hold of me again. How much energy would it take you, personally, to climb that 2,000-foot-tall giant and kill her?
The effort would probably destroy me, I thought. But I didn't see much choice. We needed information from Thor. Sam and Hearthstone and two antisocial talking goats were depending on me.
Let's do it. I grabbed the sword. I tried to focus. I didn't care so much about saving Thor. I didn't even know the guy. Nor did I particularly care why a half-mile-tall giantess thought it was funny to stand in a river and spray a waterfall between her shins. But I did care about Sam, Blitzen, and Hearthstone. They'd risked their lives to get me this far. No matter what Loki promised, I had to find a way to stop Surt and keep Fenris Wolf chained. The wolf had caused my mother's death. Mimir had said that Fenris sent his two children. They were supposed to kill me. My mom had sacrificed her life to keep me alive. I had to make her sacrifice mean something. The huge gray giantess represented everything that was in my way. She had to go. With every bit of my strength, I threw the sword. Jack sliced skyward like a rocket-powered boomerang. What happened next? Well, I wasn't sure I saw correctly. It was a long way up, but it looked like Jack flew into the giantess's left nostril. The giantess arched her back. She made a face like she was going to sneeze. Her hands slipped from the cliff tops. Jack flew out of her right nostril as the giantess's knees buckled and she fell toward us.
Timber!
Jack yelled, spiraling back to me.
Run!
I screamed. Too late. The giantess face-planted in the river with a mighty floom! I have no memory of the wall of water that washed me into a tree, along with Sam, a half-asleep Hearthstone, and the two startled goats. Nevertheless, that's what must have happened. By sheer luck, none of us died. The giantess's body had completely changed the topography. Where there'd been a river, there was now a wide, icy marsh, with water gurgling and spluttering around Dead Lady Island as it tried to find new ways to get downstream. The beach was 6 inches underwater. Thor's campsite had vanished. The god himself was nowhere to be seen.
"You killed Thor," Otis bleated. "You dropped a giantess on him."
The giantess's right arm twitched. I almost fell out of the tree. I was afraid Jack had only stunned her, but then Thor wriggled his way out of the giantess's armpit with much cursing and grunting. Sam and I helped Hearthstone out of the tree as the god of thunder trudged across the giantess's back, jumped into the marsh, and waded toward us. His eyes were blue, rimmed with angry red. His expression was so fierce it would have sent wild boars running for their mommies. Jack the Sword appeared at my side, glistening with various types of goo typically found in a giant's nostril.
"So what do you think, senor?"
His runes glowed.
You proud of me?
I'll answer that if I survive the next 2 minutes.